Good morning and welcome to the March 4th, 2025 meeting of the Minnesota House Commerce, Finance and Policy Committee. Our first order of business, we do have a quorum, and our first order of business is the approval of the minutes from the meeting of, let me double check here, February 27th. Representative Cha, have you had a chance to review the minutes, sir?
I have.
And what do you think?
I approve it. Thank you.
Moving approval. Thank you, sir. Although Representative Cha moves approval of the minutes from the 27th, any questions, comments? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. All right. We have one item on the agenda today, and it is the reinsurance bill. And we had a session earlier this, or say committee earlier this session, where we brought folks in, we talked about it, and I left this entire meeting open to have that conversation in case there was additional conversation or discussion, so we didn't get pushed for time on this. This is an extremely important issue, and I will speak more to that as soon as we get the bill introduced. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Representative Davids to chair this morning. Representative Davids has experience in this matter. He was the first person to carry legislation in the Minnesota House relative to the Minnesota Reinsurance Program. And so with that, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Davids, and I will assume my position at the testifying table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, O'Driscoll moves House File 837. And where would that be going to, Mr. Chairman?
We refer to the Committee on Health.
Committee on Health. So that'll be the motion. So can you please present your bill, and then we'll get into testimony. Oh, excuse me. Let's go to the A1 Author's Amendment. Members, you would go in your packet and get the A1 Amendment to the amendment. Representative O'Driscoll. Chairman O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since this bill was originally drafted, there has been a updated fiscal note as to what the potential cost of reinsurance might be. And the A1 amendment, simply for tracking purposes, is attempting to, as this bill moves, keep everybody informed about what the latest fiscal note or the potential anticipated costs of a reinsurance program would be. So if you take a look at the A1, it simply takes out the $413 million and inserts $504 million and $801,000 in its place. And so I'm just doing it for tracking purposes. That's the only thing that's changing in this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the bill author. What's the intended path after all this?
The path on this bill is going to be, if we move it from the Commerce Committee to the Health Committee, from Health to the Ways and Means Committee. And our hope is that when we get it to the Ways and Means Committee, that this bill will be the vehicle for reinsurance, which I know that everybody on this committee recognizes from our working session how important it is to continue some form of reinsurance. What seems to be at question is the funding mechanism on that. And our challenge is going to be, Representative Kreisha and members of the committee and Mr. Chair, our challenge is going to be, we've got four or five different options that have floated up out there. What's it going to be? How is it going to be? It has a lot of different impact. And so we'll get a chance to have some conversation on that. But I do thank you for the question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kreisha.
No further.
Any other questions on the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order that Chairman would like? The Chair moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. We now have the bill in the order that the chairman would like. So if you could please tell us about your bill, and then we'll get into testifiers.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd actually like to take the A2 amendment at this time because it does talk about a financing alternative. At this point, to just get some discussion on it. As I mentioned before, there's four or five different plans that are floating around out there. And I believe that Representative Elkins, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be offering this and discussing it. And it mirrors the governor's recommendation. And we certainly would like to have that as a discussion point today. But I do not believe that we're going to be adopting this to the bill. It's a discussion point. So, Mr. Chair, if we could defer that A2 amendment to Representative Elkins to present that.
Representative Elkins moves the A2 amendment, so it's before us. Representative Elkins.
So, this is the, this is the administration's proposal for a financing mechanism to fund the reinsurance program. And it would create a tax assessment on insurers in the state. So basically taxing insurers to fund insurance. And I think we have Julia Dreyer and Sam Smith from Commerce here today to help explain it and answer questions about it as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Hey, could you please come forward and testify?
Good morning.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, good morning. I'm Julia Dreyer. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Insurance at the Department of Commerce. I believe the question at play is to explain how the assessment works.
Yes.
So the assessment is based, assessed on MCHEM members, so the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, which was an entity that was set up to run the Minnesota's health high-risk pool, has since run our reinsurance program. There are roughly 300 organizations that are members of that group. The assessment is based on the proportional amount of written health-related premiums by each company. So a company that has more health-related premiums will be paying slightly more, but it is all proportional based on the size of the company.
Representative Elkins?
Yes, and I think what we're looking for with this alternative is having a sustainable source of revenue for funding this program that isn't entirely dependent on general fund revenues. I don't personally see a world where this committee gets a $450 million general fund appropriation right now. And so they're going to have to be other alternatives. If you look back at Mr. Harney's excellent explanation of the historic financing from the program, the legislature has always kind of cobbled together funding for a variety of sources to fund the program. And I suspect that by the time the dust settles, the same thing will probably happen here.
Yes. Representative Kreisha?
I'm sorry. Was that for me, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and to the author of the amendment, I'm curious, in just listening to Representative, the bill author's testimony, this is going to go through the bill we have in front of us will probably serve as a vehicle for many, many conversations that are coming. I'm curious why we would establish a position on this amendment now in this committee when I think conversations outside would be better suited, and why put yourself in a position where this could be voted either for or against, but not into a future engrossment? I guess the process to me, my recommendation would be, why wouldn't we just withdraw this and see if we can get it into the other vehicles and do it right down the road rather than establish a position now, which would not help you out. But I'm not the bill author or the amendment author.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it is Representative Elkins' intentions to introduce the amendment today, have a conversation about one of the many alternatives out there, and then withdraw the amendment. That was what my understanding was, but I'll let him speak for himself.
Oh, that's correct.
Representative Elkins?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions on the A2 amendment? Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to give a little background and then maybe bring the committee up to speed on the Deputy Commissioner's the discussion and presentation on the assessment. In the state of Minnesota, the MCHA program was established in 1976, and the purpose for that was to deal with people who are at that time not being able to find insurance. So we're almost at 50 years of the MCHA program in the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Insurance Act at the time, and then it became the association. And all members that sell health-related insurance products are a part of that. And the idea was that if you were to go to a carrier, make application and be rejected, you would go to MCHA with your rejection letter, and you would then present that, and then MCHA would find a place for you to be able to buy coverage. It was a marvelous program. It was working very well in the state of Minnesota for a number of years. Premiums were higher for those individuals, but they were not as out of control and skyrocketing as we're seeing now for various different reasons. And what happened with the ACA in 2013, when the ACA was adopted, the MCHA program that we had in the state of Minnesota was not permissible in its current form under the ACA. However, Minnesota agreed to and chose to keep the MCHA framework in place with the different members. And those current participants in the MCHA program are already receiving other taxes and assessments on the amount of premiums that they collect. This particular assessment would be an addition to that assessment. And there has been some conversation and some items in the news media recently that says, you know, other states do it this way through an MCHA type leverage. Minnesota is going to attempt to do the same thing. What was not brought forward, and I think it's important to talk about, is that not all those other states have those underlying taxes that are already being applied to those carriers. So this is going to be under the governor's proposal right now. What's going to happen is we're going to assess some additional fees on one insurance plan to help subsidize another insurance plan. And again, as I said, no program is perfect. There's four or five of them out there. They have their pluses, they have their minuses. But as this committee knows, I am always willing to look at both sides of the issue and vet out and to keep the record clear as to what's going on. And that's why I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on what the MCHA program was and why and how we got to where we are today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. The question I have is, I'm interested in knowing the full list of taxes and fees on the MCHA members, because I know there are others, and we may have gotten it in one of the presentations, and I'm just not recalling, but I would really like to see it just very explicitly. Here's what all of them pay. I would also like to see what kinds of tax benefits they're getting and other types of supports they're getting from the state in terms of various funding mechanisms. Just a full portrait, not for today, but for consideration as we move forward of our options. Thank you.
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Ryer, thank you for the question. The interesting part about the Minnesota legislature and this particular piece of legislation is some of this falls in the jurisdiction of the Commerce Committee, some of it falls in the jurisdiction of the Health Committee. And I think some of the things you're talking about and how it affects other plans and different things are going to shift over into the Health Committee. And if this committee is kind enough to pass it out of here, we can have that conversation with the members of the Health Committee at some point in the future related to that. One thing I do want to mention is that, and I'm hoping that as time goes on, if the governor's plan does get some traction, that the legislature consider that not all MCHA members provide health insurance. So we're going to be asking other programs, like long-term care that's under MCHA and some of the other plans, to, in essence, come out and subsidize something that they have no member benefit for. And again, I realize it's a proposal, and I'm going to be very, very frank. It's a proposal, just like mine is a proposal. Like we're hearing some folks in the Senate proposing a premium subsidy or a premium write-down on that. We've got four or five, like I say, different competing plans that are out there. And that's why it's important that this get to the Ways and Means Committee in the House and the Senate Finance Committee, so that as we start moving in and dialing into joint targets, we know what funds and resources are available to help Minnesotans in this particular market. Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My request then would be that since it crosses over jurisdictions, that we ask nonpartisan staff to do an integrated analysis so that we would be able to have that inform the conversations on both sides. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Very good. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been thinking about just turning this amendment into a bill so that we could get the fiscal analysis we need by the time it gets to health. the other, I mean, there are going to be other options on the table as well. One of the things that I've been looking at as I studied the history of the program is that when it was first instituted for the 2017-2018 biennium, money was taken from the Healthcare Access Fund. And just rough back of the envelope, if we increase the provider tax from the current 1.8% to the original 2.0%, that could provide us with almost half the money we need to fund this program. So I think there are other options besides these that should be on the table as well. But it's important that we're having this discussion, and I appreciate Chair O'Driscoll's characterization of the history, which is completely consistent with everything I've been reading as well.
Any questions?
Chair, he fact-checked me.
He did. Yeah, I did. And he passed.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Any other questions on the Elkins A2 amendment? Representative Elkins, you were going to withdraw it?
Yeah, we're going to withdraw this amendment, but keep this on your radar. This needs to be priced out as among the other alternatives as well, but I'm sure that this is going to be in the mix as the negotiations continue.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Elkins withdraws the A2 amendment. Now to the bill as amended. We have several testifiers, I believe. The first will be Dan Andreessen, Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Thank you, Representative Elkins. Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 837. As I mentioned in a previous testimony, Minnesota's reinsurance program has been a resounding success in stabilizing the market and reducing premiums on average by 20%. As a result, this has helped Minnesota have the fifth lowest uninsured rate in the country. Reinsurance supports 187,000 Minnesotans who buy their coverage in the individual market. It subsidizes the cost of care that's delivered by hospitals, doctors, and nurses, costs that would otherwise be paid in higher premiums. 100% of the reinsurance funds are being used to pay for verified medical claims. In 2017, before the start of the program, Minnesota ranked 35th in the country on Kaiser Family Foundation's list of average statewide premiums. Minnesota has moved up to number 10 the first year of the reinsurance program and has since been ranked number 1 or 2 throughout the country in having the lowest premiums. There's no doubt the program works, so the only question left is to consider is how do we pay for it? The state has historically contributed general fund and healthcare access fund dollars to the program to help leverage federal funding. Both the general fund and healthcare access fund are supported by a broad set of taxes by many entities, including health insurers contribute over $600 million annually to the state budget. In addition, health plans pay an assessment to help fund MNsure and hold on to $1 billion of payment delays in the Medicaid program to help stabilize the state budget. Health plans are already helping to pay for the reinsurance program by paying into the state budget, which is the source of funding for the program. Now, if you wanted to ensure that health plan taxes pay for reinsurance, you could direct any of these taxes to the premium security account. When it comes to funding reinsurance, all states do it a little bit differently. Comparing one state to another can be difficult because all states are in different circumstances. In the health and human services world, when comparing Medicaid programs, there's a similar difficulty, and kind of the saying goes is if you've seen one Medicaid program, you've seen one Medicaid program. Reinsurance is kind of the same way. They may all have the same basic frameworks, but they all differ in terms of the coinsurance and attachment points they use. They all have different sizes of the individual markets, and they all receive differing amounts of federal funding. Because of this uniqueness of each state, they differ on how they fund each of their programs. Now, most of this is going to depend on what type of premium reductions a state wants to achieve. Most achieve around premium reductions around 10 to 15%. Pennsylvania is one of the lowest at around 4 to 6%, and Minnesota is one of the highest at reducing premiums by 20%. Georgia, Virginia, and Wisconsin use general fund dollars similar to Minnesota, and each of those states' health plans are also paying taxes into their general funds. Other states use a portion of existing health plan taxes, such as Oregon, which uses 0.3% of a 2% tax on health plans to fund their program. Other states use other existing taxes, such as New Jersey and Rhode Island, which uses tax penalties from citizens who violate the individual health insurance mandates that they have in those two states. Or you could be a state like Colorado that kind of does an all-of-the-above approach and uses a mixture of general fund dollars and taxes and fees. As was mentioned, other states do use an assessment model. North Dakota is one of them. In this case, it's important to point out that North Dakota also allows the assessment cost to be deducted from a health plan's premium tax liability. The North Dakota filings expressly acknowledge that this was done to protect affordability and remove costs that would otherwise be passed on to the consumer. This is because new taxes, fees, and assessments are often passed on to the consumer in terms of higher costs. This can be especially true in small margin industries. Council nonprofit health plans historically operate with a 1-3% margin. We estimate that the assessment model that was being proposed in the A2 amendment by the governor won't be as effective in lowering premiums because of the low margins for our members. And therefore, any new assessment will eat into the premium reductions we currently are seeing in the program. The individual market is 100% comprised of nonprofit health plans who choose to be in this market and provide access to care for Minnesotans. For-profit plans do not participate in this market and will not be assessed as significantly as nonprofit plans will be. We recognize the level of funding being requested in this legislation, but also the return on investment is also significant. The investment benefits Minnesotans who are in a market who have no other options for their health insurance. For most, it's either buying insurance or going uninsured. We urge the committee to continue the broad-based funding source that the state has used since 2018, and we thank Representative Driscoll for his leadership in continuing this program. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Andreessen? Representative Fagan.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to clarify when you say that this is about people go up buying insurance or going uninsured. Are you talking about individual people buying insurance, or are you talking about health insurance companies buying insurance so that they can insure the people that they want to insure? Because I thought that we weren't talking about the actual ability of people to be insured, but the companies that are providing the insurance having insurance to backstop against the insurance for those individual consumers.
Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Finke. So what I was talking about was the individual person. And if you are buying insurance on your own in the individual market, that's because you're not able to get insurance through an employer, because you either work for an employer that doesn't offer it, or you might be a small business owner or a farmer, or you have an income that's above the limit for like state public programs. You may, you're younger than 65, so you don't have Medicare eligibility. So these are folks who really have no other option for insurance. And so that's when I say that they can either buy it or go without. That's kind of the choices that they make.
Representative Fanke.
Thank you. So I just want to be clear that if we, it is the position that you're stating is that if we don't reinsure the insurance companies, those individuals will not get their health care. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Finke, what I'm saying is that if we don't use this subsidy program to help bring down premiums, what we've seen in the past is that premiums will go up and it'll be harder for people in this market to afford health insurance.
Representative Finke.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I just want to make sure that we're understanding that the subsidy to these companies is doing the thing we want it to do and not subsidizing bailouts for companies.
And the other issue, those are good questions, Representative Finke. The other issue back when we did this, originally my original bill was we had counties that were going to zero carriers, didn't have any. So that was a very, very big problem. And if we don't do something here, we could be in the same mess we were back then, and we want to get out of it. This program has been very successful. And I thank Representative Stevenson for the years that he carried it. And now O'Driscoll's taken the mantle on this one. So Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Andreessen, I just had a question about the interaction between reinsurance and the expiring federal tax credits. Let's suppose that we reauthorize reinsurance, but the federal government takes no action and the tax cuts expire. It's my understanding that we would expect a 25%, 30% increase in premiums in that instance as compared to a 50% increase if we also don't do reinsurance. But in that scenario where we act and the federal government doesn't, and premiums go up 25-30%, what impact do you think that would have on the individual market in terms of enrollment, or what Chair Davids was just talking about in terms of health plan offerings?
Mr. Andreessen, to the Stevenson question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, you're correct. It's still going to have an impact if Congress doesn't act. I think we're still kind of running numbers as to what that would mean. So unfortunately, the two things are happening at the same time. So yes, if we extend reinsurance and Congress does not act, premiums will go up. The reverse is also true, that if the state doesn't act and Congress does, premiums would go up. And so we're hoping to at least encourage the state to do their part to lower the premiums, and hopefully Congress will do their part as well.
Chair Stevenson.
Thanks.
Great. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to add one other premium driver on there, and it's based on one of the discussions we had last week, and that is the cost of various mandates that the state may choose to include in plans, because they would also be included in the individual plans. And to Mr. Andreessen's point and Representative Finke's question, those would be things that would cause those premiums to go up. No Fed, no state, more mandates, making the insurance less affordable. So in our endeavors to try to include more coverage, if it becomes cost prohibitive, we're not making the base coverage of the health care available to people because they can't afford it, let alone the mandates that we were attempting to try to include in that coverage.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think an important concept for members of this committee and the health committee to understand is that of the insurance death spiral. So an insurance death spiral, and that's a Googleable term, is when, as a result of rising premiums, people who are relatively healthy, who have trouble, difficulty affording the premiums, basically drop out of the market, start dropping out of the market, leaving only the sicker population that really, really needs the coverage in it, and leading to further increases in the premiums. Wash, rinse, repeat, recycle until the point you get to the point where the insurance market just can't support itself and it collapses. And I think the best way to look at reinsurance is it's an insurance policy against this market collapsing into an insurance death spiral.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Any other questions for Mr. Andreessen? If not, we will move on to the next testifier. That is Gail Larson on behalf of SEIU Healthcare, Minnesota and Iowa. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Gail Larson. I'm here on behalf of SEIU Healthcare, Minnesota and Iowa. Good morning. Our union represents about 50,000 healthcare workers around the state in Minnesota, hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and self-directed home care. We oppose House File 837. Please fund the program through the industry assessment like the A2 amendment. The status quo is broken. Health insurance companies are deeply unpopular because of many people have had terrible experiences with them. For 13 years, I've worked as a PCA for my significant other. I had to give up a job with financial services company that had good health insurance. As a PCA, my insurance has a $6,000 deductible. I developed a terrible knee pain. For months, I put off going to the doctor because of my high deductible. When I finally went, the doctor ordered MRIs, CAT scans, injections, and other procedures that I had no relief. I finally had surgery, and that has gone well. But now I have over $8,000 in standing medical bills, and it feels like I'll never get caught up or get ahead. We all want to make insurance more affordable, but we will not solve the problem by giving over $500 million to the very people who profit most from the current system. More importantly, we do not have over $500 million to give unless we cut other critical priorities. If you spend over $500 million on insurance companies, will you be able to protect our current Medicaid providers' rates, which are already too low, especially in mental health services? Will you be able to make critical new investments in long-term funding for nursing homes and home care, including a new contract for workers like me? An insurance fee has funded reinsurance programs in red states like North Dakota, Idaho, and Montana. An industry assessment was how we funded the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association across the country. Legislatures from both parties agree that funding reinsurance through the industry fee is a smart way to protect their general fund. In many states, there is a bipartisan agreement that we should protect critical investments in education and human services. I hope Minnesota can do that same. Thank you for being open to a discussion on this.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Any questions for Ms. Larson? Thank you so much. Chair O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, I would just echo something that Ms. Larson said. She's 100% spot on when she talks about persons buying insurance policies in the individual market. The deductibles on those plans can be as high as she was talking about, $6,000 or even higher. And the annual out-of-pockets could be into five digits, right, $10,000 plus. And I want members to think about what she just said. And that is, if we don't do anything on this program, what's going to happen to those premiums to keep them affordable? And if you want to talk about people not having insurance and paying premiums that they're not going to be able to use, that's just going to be less people who can afford this. And the cost doesn't go away, right? It's going to find itself into our human services programs and into other social safety networks that we have. So the cost gets displaced. It doesn't go away. And last time we were having this discussion, I encouraged every member of this committee to go to MSHR, or to a MNSHA rather, and to take a look at the premiums that are on there and the cost of those premiums. And as Representative Stevenson indicated today, those could go up by about 50%. So if you have a $6,000 or $7,000 annual deductible and your premiums are about $750 right now, you're talking about what, $1,200, not quite, $1,100 in premiums with the same deductible. We're just trying to maintain what we have. It doesn't improve the process. We're trying to maintain the status quo, treading water, if you will. Big stuff that we're looking at. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Ms. Larson? Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Ms. Larson. We'll go now to Dr. Alita Borud.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Commerce Committee.
Yes. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members and Chair, for this opportunity to testify. You know, I am Alita Borud. I live in Rochester. I'm a doctor, and I'm a fierce advocate for keeping our rural healthcare infrastructure intact. I think everyone, and what I'm hearing, everyone here believes that every Minnesotan deserves access to affordable and quality health care, regardless of their zip code and how they got here. And it's already been discussed that if the enhanced premium tax credits under the ACA expire this year, the cost of health insurance will go up, as you had talked about. And in fact, in Region 1, I've seen some estimates, depending on your age, may be as high as 200%. And if we also experience large cuts to Medicaid, many rural healthcare facilities, our community hospitals, our nursing homes, which are already operating in the red, are likely to close. So you, who I know are devoted to serving your constituents, must address the question, how will Minnesota meet this moment? And will you put the needs of our healthcare, the healthcare needs of all your constituents, above that of corporate profits? Since 2017, Minnesota has spent over $1 billion on reinsurance on what was supposed to be a temporary stopgap measure, assisting that small sliver of Minnesotans buying insurance on the individual market. You know, looking at the statistics, even though we have low rates for our or low premiums for our insurance. Minnesota is a very stark outlier in the nation in the large amount that taxpayers subsidize reinsurance. Of the 18 states that have reinsurance programs, only Maryland subsidizes it more. But of course, Maryland funds it not just with tax dollars, as you had said, many states also use an assessment on the plans. In fact, most states make insurers pay for reinsurance. So I would ask you, why doesn't Minnesota? This bill would pour another $500 million, as we've discussed, into the pockets of the insurance company, and that is nearly the entire projected budget surplus for the coming biennium, with short calls, as we all know, coming in future years. And I consider that this would be a fairly reckless use of very precious general fund dollars when we face, as we've already discussed here, many very serious health care needs. So I urge you to consider, as you will discuss, another funding mechanism for reinsurers other than taxpayers paying into the general fund. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
No, thank you, Dr. Borer. Any questions for the doctor? My hip is kind of sore right now. Well, we'll talk. We'll talk later. So thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, next we have Ann New Brindley, Policy Director, Minnesota Business Partnership.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Obviously, we've already had a little bit of a conversation about this, so I will be a little bit more brief, which I know is shocking to everyone. Again, Ann New Brindley with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I just thought I would start by reiterating the lay of the land a little bit, just that Minnesota really does rank among the top states for healthcare quality. We have one of the lowest uninsured rates in the entire country. We are the fourth in the country for employer-provided insurance, and six for the employer's contribution to those healthcare costs. So really, we do really well, and we should be really proud of that. And every Minnesota Business Partnership company offers employer-sponsored healthcare, and we really believe in affordability, access, and equity in healthcare, and they are key priorities for our members. Reinsurance is not just important to stabilize the individual insurance market in Minnesota. It also helps stabilize the broader healthcare ecosystem. If we don't get it done, and I appreciate that it is a broad priority in the legislature, but if we don't get it done, it's likely to lead to pretty substantial budget shortfalls for healthcare providers and drive up insurance rates in the commercial markets. And as we consider funding options, I would just encourage you to think about increasing taxes on insurers also drives up insurance rates. So not doing reinsurance will drive up insurance rates, but also increasing taxes on insurance drives up insurance rates. And those taxes currently are well over 8% on insurers. I think we all understand the fiscal lay of the land, but I would just ask that we all consider the consequences of not prioritizing reinsurance. And most importantly, the estimates are that almost 100,000 people would stop buying insurance on the individual market. And for context, as sort of to the previous conversation, for context, they do pay very high premiums and very high deductibles. I experienced those myself for many years. But I would just add the context that they do receive preventative care at least. Whereas if they go uninsured, if they stop purchasing insurance on the individual market and are uninsured entirely, they are foregoing preventative care, which they do receive prior to deductibles being met on the individual market plans. Obviously, we know that not getting reinsurance done has really potentially catastrophic consequences. Certainly, it leads to more uncompensated care for our healthcare providers, higher insurance rates for workers across Minnesota, potential disaster, frankly, for our healthcare providers that are already operating on the margins, worst case scenario for providers closing down service lines or facilities, leading to less access for everyone. 18 states followed Minnesota's lead in implementing reinsurance programs across the country, and literally no other state is considering eliminating those programs because they are just really effective in making sure that folks have access to affordable health care. The Minnesota Business Partner continues to be committed to supporting affordable, accessible health care for all Minnesotans and a stable health care ecosystem. And reinsurance just plays a really crucial role in making that happen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you very much. Thanks. And we will now go to Devin Bruce, Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for MAPE. But I have a question for nonpartisan staff. And the question is, we talk about health-related insurers. Who are they? Who's included in there? Do we have long-term care, non-major medical companies? Who are the health-related insurers? Who could? Larry, Ms. Pompo, sorry.
Are you talking about the members of MCHA or just all health-related insurers that operate in Minnesota?
All health-related insurers. When we use that term, what does that mean? Who are they?
It can be a variety of products: long-term care insurance, qualified long-term care insurance, accident and sickness insurance, catastrophic, short-term, limited-duration health plans, as well as the health insurance and HMOs we all think of.
For a long-term care company or some of those, would they be taxed under this plan?
That would be a fiscal question.
Okay. Well, getting ahead of myself here. Okay. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bruce. If you please provide your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Devin Bruce. I'm the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, MAPE. We're a union of over 18,500 state professionals across all agencies, boards, and commissions. House File 837 proposes the continuation of an enormously expensive and largely ineffective stabilization of insurance companies who every 3 years propose massive increases to premiums while recording billions in profits and pocketing taxpayer money. Time and again, consumer advocates from across the spectrum come to the legislature asking for systematic solutions to the actual drivers of health care increases, which are driving the premium increases. And yet we are met, as Chair O'Driscoll eloquently put, with the status quo. Extension of what was intended to be a temporary emergency market stabilization due to the federal government discontinuing their subsidization of this plan until a viable alternative and transition plan could be brought forward. The amount of money that this bill is giving to companies is roughly the equivalent of 80% of the total projected budget surplus in the coming years. And that's accounting for inflationary costs as well. As there doesn't seem to be a viable plan or political will to build the viable alternatives this session, and in recognizing the fact that over 185,000 individuals on this plan would see drastic input costs, we would strongly recommend the adoption of the A2 amendment, which would assess the fee, or as some of the other proposals have brought forward, subsidizing the individuals directly rather than the companies for their cost of insurance costs. The one thing that I also wanted to point out largely was we continue to conflate the basic assumption that health insurance is healthcare, and it's not. One of the main drivers of healthcare costs, particularly for the insurance companies, is largely based in their administrative fees, which are then passed on to consumers, and we see these massive spikes. Instead of building out the public option, we continue to come back and ask for more money directed to private insurance companies to stabilize the private plans, which account for about 5% of the actual market here in Minnesota. Continuing to do these handouts of multi-billion dollars without any plan to transition away from what was supposed to be a temporary measure, nor a plan to actually address the unpredictability of whether the federal government will do its fair share in the next couple months. This plan is simply irresponsible and bad fiscal policy. We ask you to oppose this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bruce. Any questions for Mr. Bruce? Thank you so much.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Herr.
I thought you would ask maybe what the fair share is.
I can only take a beat down so many times, I guess. It's, so apparently nobody talked to him. But,
it's a taxes joke.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Bruce. Okay, let's go to Bentley Graves, Director of Healthcare and Transportation Policy, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank the chair and the committee for the opportunity to talk about this important issue once again. I think a week or so ago, we spent some time kind of laying out the chamber's thoughts with regard to some of the other alternatives that are being proposed with regard to stability for the individual market, things like direct premium subsidies, paying for this with tax increases. So I'm gonna leave that where I left it last week and talk specifically about the program itself today, the impact on our members. The individual market, I think, as many of you know, is an important place for coverage for many Minnesotans who are self-employed entrepreneurs. But it's also an important source of coverage for very small employers and their employees, given the ability of employers to help their employees buy their own coverage through defined contribution arrangements using health reimbursement arrangements, or HRAs. In any given year, roughly 5% of our members provide coverage to their employees through these defined contribution arrangements, helping their employees buy their own insurance through the individual market. Another 5% of our members who currently offer coverage tell us they'll likely consider this type of defined contribution approach if continually rising healthcare costs challenge their ability to maintain the coverage that they provide today. Similarly, more than 20% of those who don't currently offer insurance tell us that they are looking at these types of defined contribution arrangements to help their employees buy their coverage. I share these statistics because they help underscore the value and importance of maintaining a healthy and stable individual health insurance market in Minnesota. And reinsurance has done just that, brought stability to the individual market. And frankly, it's done so in a remarkable fashion. For that context, I'd like to go back to September 30th, 2016, when the Commissioner of Commerce, Mike Rothman, issued a press release announcing the 2017 premiums for the individual market. Here's what the Commissioner said. For the seven insurers in the individual market, the 2017 rate increases range from 50 to 67%. The individual market's largest insurer, covering 103,000 Minnesotans, about 40% of the state's individual market, was forced to leave the market due to ongoing financial losses. Enrollment caps were instituted to address the concerns of the remaining insurers, many of whom also indicated preparations to exit the market. As Commissioner Rothman put it in his release, quote, Minnesota's individual market for 2017 was on the verge of collapse, end quote. As Representative Elkins so succinctly put it, and this is the insurance death spiral. In explaining the reasons for the turmoil in the individual market, the Commissioner noted that the rate increases were at least in part reflective of a national trend. But he also went on to note the following, quote, Minnesota's individual market also faces unique challenges because of a disproportionate concentration of individuals with serious medical conditions whose high-cost claims must be absorbed by a relatively small risk pool, pushing up rates for everyone in the individual market. The Commissioner urged quick action to protect Minnesota consumers who have purchased their own health insurance, and in doing so, recounted heartbreaking stories about how hardworking families are struggling with tough, painful choices because of skyrocketing costs. As you can see, and as many of you remember, this was a very difficult time in our state. Very fortunately, the governor and the legislature in a bipartisan manner took action and established the state's reinsurance program to lower premiums and stabilize the individual market. It did this by addressing the unique problem identified by then Commissioner Rothman in his release. The program leverages state and federal dollars to help pay for the high-cost claims of the sickest individuals in the market, taking these costs out of the calculation of rates and lowering costs for everyone in the market. Demonstrating this fact, the regular reporting for reinsurance continues to show the program's funds have been used to pay the claims for those with diabetes, heart and respiratory issues, cancer, and many others. As a result, thanks to reinsurance, we now sit here in 2025 with the second lowest individual market premiums in the country at a stable, growing individual market. Because of this, we strongly support the continuation of the state's reinsurance program. The Department of Commerce reports the premiums in the individual market are about 25% lower than they otherwise would be without reinsurance. And we know that rates would increase significantly in 26 and 27 if state funding for the program is not provided this session. We thank Representative O'Driscoll for bringing the bill forward, and we thank the committee, and we ask the committee to support its passage. With the value of hindsight and the proven track record of our reinsurance program, we can help ensure continued stability in the individual market and help ensure we don't return to those very troubling and challenging days in 2016 and 2017 when Minnesota's individual market was on the verge of collapse. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Questions for Mr. Graves? Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just curious if it is your opinion, Mr. Graves, that this should be just our plan going forward. Like, should reinsurance be the strategy for which we stabilize this market in perpetuity?
Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think that is an open question. I think for sure that is the best path in front of us to maintain stability for the next 2 years. But one of the reasons why I think it's so important to go back to 2017 and note Commissioner Rothman's assessment of the problems in the market point to the solution that reinsurance offers.
Representative Fink.
Thank you. This is my first committee hearing on this subject matter, and I know that it's complicated, and I'm sure that I don't understand all the ins and outs of this, but I just want to say that I've never heard a conversation that tells me more firmly that we should just be paying for health care for everyone. This is just, like, to me, this feels like an insane system being propped up by solutions we all agree don't work. So it's, as a newcomer from the outside, I just want to say this is just feels bats, that we all kind of accept that the system is so poorly organized that we're putting $500 million to prop it up in a system we know that's not even going to be able to sustain itself while the federal government comes in to cut the backstop anyways. So just my perspective. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Finke. Like I've said before, if you think health insurance is expensive now, just wait till it's free. Representative Dodseth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask, I don't know if a testifier or maybe the author of the bill could answer the question. My understanding, there was monies allocated for reinsurance in the fund up till 2023. What happened to those funds?
Representative, Mr. Graves.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the number in front of me, but that is correct. There were funds in the premium security account that as of the last budget were taken out to support spending elsewhere in the budget. So I believe that's correct. I don't have the number in front of me, but I'm sure somebody could probably.
Representative Dodseth, maybe we could go, if we bring Mr. Andreessen up here to the table, who might be able to shed some light on your question. Mr. Andreessen to the Dodseth question. I hope you're paying attention. Did you? Should he repeat it or?
No,
because I wasn't paying attention. But yeah, no, I'm kidding. No. Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dodseth, I'm bringing up the number here. Yes, there was money in the account in 2023. Around $275 million was withdrawn that year. In 2024, another $8 million was taken out, approximately. And those are the ominous bills for that year.
Or some thoughts?
I guess I'd be curious where that money went. If we pulled that out, I mean, do we have any idea where that money went and why it was taken out?
Where's our fiscal?
I can answer the question, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's let Representative Chairman Stevenson answer the question.
Mr. Chair, I can answer the question because
where to go?
Both my bill that put the money in the premium security account and my bill that took the money out of the premium security account. So I think I can answer Representative Dotz's question. So in 2022, the Minnesota Legislature passed an extension of the reinsurance program. We agreed to get a waiver that will allow us to operate the program for 5 years, but the bill only agreed to fund the program for 3 years. And we took general fund dollars and put them into the premium security account We also put some money into the healthcare access fund to protect in case the federal government penalized our Minnesota Care program for operating reinsurance. But we put money into the premium security account from the general fund to finance 3 years of reinsurance. After a couple years, it became clear that we had put too much money in, that we didn't need to have that extra money in order to fund 3 years of reinsurance. So in 2023, we removed the excess from the premium security account and brought back into the general fund where it currently sits or was spent or whatever you want to say. It was in the general fund.
Person Batza.
Thank you for your clarification. So basically, we pulled the money out. Now we're looking to put it back in again. That is what I'm hearing. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dodsett. Other questions? Representative Smith.
This is just a point of clarification. I believe the testifier from the chamber said this was for the next 2 years, but it's probably a question for Chair. I don't think that's what your bill does. Can you just clarify the one which it is?
Chair O'Driscoll to the Smith question.
Yes, thank you, Representative Smith, for the question. And what the bill does is it asks for an extension on this, which I wanted to throw everything out on the table that we could and keep moving it forward. And as Representative Stevenson has testified to and others have supported, we did ask for a five-year waiver. We funded three of those 5 years. There's 2 years that we're looking at right now. In anticipation of that, we would ask for a continued waiver on this. Because the federal government has been very accommodating to Minnesota's request for this unique kind of system of financing and an exception on the ACA. My preference is at the time that we were doing this, when we had the five-year waiver, was to fund reinsurance for 5 years because that's the way you get the most efficient use of the dollars, because the insurance companies can plan for a five-year cycle instead of a two-year or a three-year cycle like we have in the past. And so that would be allowing for some smoothing of those premiums over time and some predictability for the insurance companies as well as predictability for anticipated reimbursement for health care costs. So, Representative Smith, I'm not sure if that background helps you with your question or not, but that's a little bit of history for you today.
Chair, can I ask a follow-up?
Certainly, Representative Smith.
That's helpful. Just to clarify, so you're asking that the waiver be indefinitely increased, but you're saying your intention as far as the funding is not? Maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying, but is that the point you're making?
Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Smith, thanks for the clarification. We can only fund through two more years because that's all we have on the waiver, is two of the 5 years left. What the bill also anticipates is that we would ask Minnesota to once again ask in the future to keep our options open for reinsurance as we continue to assess how to deal with this whole entire question that's before the Commerce Committee and will be before the legislature before the end of session.
Representative Smith.
That's good.
Okay. Representative Reimer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Mr. Andreessen, just about talking about the insurance death spiral, which was referenced before, and how when insurance becomes unaffordable, we have people drop out of the market, therefore we're not able to cover the people who actually really, really need insurance. From your membership, from the companies, what kind of proactive strategies are you guys considering in solving that problem? What kind of corporate strategies or coverage offered, or what other alternatives have you all or your members explored over the last, call it, 5-6 years?
Mr. Andreessen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reimer, all of our members are in competition with each other, so they're always trying to innovate and produce new products in the market. There are several requirements that all of our members have to stay within in terms of their coverage, network adequacy requirements, and so forth. And so there's some reason or ability to innovate, but there's also they're kind of stuck in based on whatever laws the legislature puts on them.
Mm-hmm. Representative Reimer?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then talking about mandates, we heard a lot about the newly imposed mandates that happened last session, and mandates seem to be compiled on top of each other. How much of a constraint is that in the freedom that your members have to actually do business properly and bring down costs?
Mr. Andreessen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reimer, our latest analysis shows that the benefit mandates that were passed the last 2 years added around 5%, 2 to 5% to the premiums, which is around $15 to $25 a month per person per month.
Representative Reimer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment on that. I think it's really important for us to, as a committee, tread lightly on mandates if private health insurance is what we want to maintain in the state of Minnesota. Generally speaking, every time we add a new regulation or mandate, it puts pressure on the existing members of somebody like Mr. Andreessen's organization. But it shouldn't, because when competition enters the market, costs will come down. And with every new mandate that we put on the burden of providing health insurance here in the state of Minnesota, we're actually crowding out competition and not lowering costs. We're raising costs, even though our intentions might be very, very good. So just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Reimer. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a comment and then a question for the group. My comment first is about the system itself. We have an individual market which has needed ongoing financial support to be maintained, Mr. Graves' comment brought stability and done so at a remarkable level. I would like to also point out, though, that if you listen to the testimony from Ms. Larson, it's not adequate coverage to cover the needs of the people who are using it, which kind of takes me back to Ms. New Brindley's comment that all of their members want equity, access, and affordability for people. But we're looking at a system as a whole that isn't enabling that. So I am just want to highlight that what we're doing today is important. It's an important conversation. We have an immediate short-term issue to think about. But the long-term or even medium-term is that we have a structural failure of the system that we should be thinking about very carefully and looking at what the options are. Not a free system, but one that makes sense at a broader, more structural level. So here's that was my little soapbox. And now, you know, I came in here ready to talk about reinsurance, and I'm just sitting here even more anxious than I entered the room feeling. Because what I'm thinking about is what happens if we fund reinsurance with general fund and we bring it down 25% and the federal government doesn't fund it, and so we're still looking at a 25 to 30% rate increase. What are those people going to do? I don't feel confident that the money that we would be putting into it would keep those people in the market. I think it's both and if we want to keep those people in the market. So I think we need to talk about Plan B for how are we going to look out for people who are dependent on this for their immediate short-term non-structural change solution. And to me, one way to think about it may be going to an assessment or going to probably the assessment option and then being able to say, do we backfill? I don't know what the solution is, but I think that we are looking at a real crisis if we only have half of the equation funded. And so I want us to think about that as we move through the committees and take that really seriously, because we have a responsibility to people in Minnesota. We need to be cautious with our funding. If we put all of that into general fund, are we doing other things to assure that we have a stable system? So I don't know there's an answer to the question right now, Mr. Chair, but I wanted to put that very serious concern on the table.
And thank you very much. That is a very serious concern. Working on this issue over the years, it's been interesting because, you know, a lot of times the Republicans propose this and the DFL is against it and vice versa. That's kind of the way this place works. This is a different issue. When I first wrote the bill, I received support from Amy Klobuchar, I about tipped over. I didn't know what to do. From Senator Tina Smith, from Representative Craig, all helped on this. And then I kind of got out of the picture, and then you were next, right, Chair Stevenson? Or was there somebody in between?
Mr. Chair, Lori Halverson had the bill in the House.
Yeah, that's right.
In between.
Okay, okay. So it was very unfortunate for her because she had to become a county commissioner after that. So you see what happens on some of these things. So, and then Chair Stevenson, no, Lori Halverson, she was a great chair. And then now to Representative O'Driscoll. So whether it be Elkins involved or Ryer, I'm sure that Representative Herr will be involved. Your point's very, very good because there's something we have to do now, but how long do we maintain this? Where do we go from here on this set of folks that we want to make sure have coverage? So with that, any other question? Yes, Chair Stevenson.
Well, I don't have a question, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I was, it felt like maybe you were going to move to close here. I want to comment on the bill, but I can wait if there are questions or more testimony.
And I apologize. We do have more testimony, and then we'll have some folks want
to
wrap it up.
Mr. Chair.
Okay.
If I may,
Representative
Chair.
Elkins.
If I may, Chair.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah.
I just cut you right off, didn't I? Representative Ryer, sorry.
I just wanted to add that, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the regard for Chair Halverson and want to point out that I did move into her seat in Eagan, so I am so glad to be here, and I appreciate her being my county commissioner.
Absolutely. She was very, very good to work with.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Can we then hold Representative Ryer partially responsible for the problems that we have since she's now the occupant of
No, we may not, Mr. Chair.
Just wanted to know how that works.
It doesn't. Representative Elk, could you have the floor, sir?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important that everyone understand what is the mechanism by which this works. And effectively what it does is that it picks up a piece of the cost of serving the most expensive patients. So MNCHA has a consulting company called Wakely do a quarterly report on the whole program, and there's always one appendix in the report. The latest one was the 2024 year-end report that just came out in early February, and if members haven't looked at it, they probably should. But on Appendix B, it shows where the what are the conditions that people have that are whose claims are being paid for out of reinsurance, and the top five are like diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, heart arrhythmias, immune system disorders, metastatic cancer, and heart failure. So these are all expensive. They're chronic conditions. You can't really cure them in most cases, but you can manage them. Basically, if what we're subsidizing is people with these conditions, so that the cost of their care doesn't inflate everyone else's insurance premium. So I don't know if this report has been circulated to the members, but it's probably a good idea if staff distributes a link to this report. It's really worth reading.
That'd be great, Representative Elkins. Thank you for that. Any other questions of the author, or we'll go to some wrap-up comments here? Who would like to make some wrap-up comments? Chair Stevenson, and then Representative Herr, do you want to?
I have a wrap-up statement.
Okay, so we'll go to, let's go to Representative Smith, and then Stevenson, and then we will take a vote on the bill. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple things to say on this that I've been kind of waiting on, because we've been building up to this for about a couple weeks, which I appreciate that we've gone through this sort of step-by-step. And I do want to touch on something that a couple of reps have already said, which is, overall, I think as we talk about this, it is clear that the health insurance system in our country is not working. We're talking today specifically about the individual and small market, but that is a market that we have created over decades of these band-aids that we've put on it, primarily that we are dividing our population into all these different pools. We have our U.S. Bank employees, the Mayo Clinic employees, then we have Best Buy, and then the teachers and the public employees, and then some people fall through the cracks. And there's this market that is created. It's not a free market in any sense of the term. And I know some folks would like to immediately say, well, that's the ACA's fault. But before that, these people would just not be insured. As Representative Elkins pointed out, if you look at the reports, what are actually being paid for here, it's things like diabetes, which famously was a condition that could get you denied health care for years in this country. It doesn't make sense the way we are doing this. And we are having health insurance companies actually come to this committee and say it's not, we can't provide the service at a cost that makes it accessible. You have to pay us for some of this, or we can't make it accessible. It's going to be too expensive for people. That's what the plans are telling us. And I recognize what a couple members have said, is that previously there are counties where there are zero carriers if we don't do something like reinsurance. And again, I don't think that's proving that we should do some sort of reinsurance, but it's also proving that health insurance and relying on health insurance companies is a bad move. It's a bad public policy that we continually are doubling down on, and probably will this session by passing some form of this. People's health care is not a good business model. It shouldn't be. It's a public good, and that's how we should fund it. Chair, you said, you know, wait till it's free. I mean, I can show you places where at the point of service it's free, and it's working way better than we're doing here. I just read a report from the University of Minnesota that compared the United States to 10 other European nations. They do it all kinds of different ways. Switzerland, England, the Nordic countries. We ranked 11th by far, both in cost and in health outcomes. We're at the bottom. This is not a good system. And I want to say something else very clearly about reinsurance is not. Reinsurance does not lower the cost of health care. This will hopefully keep insurance companies from raising premiums, but it's not going to change the cost of healthcare. Hospitals are not going to get paid any more money for services they provide because of reinsurance. Private practices won't get more money from those insurance companies for services they provide. Nurses, support staff are not going to get higher salaries to help with the workforce situation and draw people to Minnesota. This isn't going to raise any rates in our Medicaid programs or in our Medicare programs, but $500 million will go to health insurance companies if we do this. Health insurance companies that are part of a $1.6 trillion industry in the United States of America. $1.6 trillion with a T. And I want to be clear for people who are just hearing about this now what reinsurance is. Basically, it's a Menards rebate for health insurance companies. They pay for a service for a particular kind of people, or people go, they get care, the insurance companies pays for that care to that provider, and then they send a receipt, literally, to the state, and we send them a check. And the report that Rep. Elkins just talked about, I have the third quarter one, not the newest one, but you can see who's getting these reports, like Blue Cross, like Medica, these poor companies that are on the verge of I don't know what, based on what we hear in this committee. That's who's getting this money. There are other options. We have the Minnesota Health Plan bill here. I assume we're not going to get enough support. It's Representative Ryer's bill to pass that this time around. But there's a lot of other options that we could do. And this illustrates the difficulty and, to be quite frank, the failure of what we have been doing in this state and in this country for years. Now, final thing I will say is because I think we are going to pass some form of reinsurance this session because we are in a bad spot and there's a lot of bad options and probably reinsurance is probably the best of bad options. And one of the choices we make is are we going to pay for it out of the general budget, general fund, or are we going to, with a tax assessment, ask the insurance providers to pay some of it? And I almost asked the chamber when they were up here and other members of the business community, like what other private company or nonprofit asked the state to pay for their liability insurance so that they can provide the product that is the purpose of their company or nonprofit? I don't think any. Maybe I'm missing some. But that's what we're asked to do here. So at the end of the day, this is a evidence of a failure, but also when we talk about reinsurance, at the very least, we need to ask these health insurance providers to pay for their own liability insurance. Thank Rep. O'Driscoll for bringing this. This is a tough bill. You've said this all along. I understand. You understand that. But discussions will be ongoing. Thanks, Chair.
And thank you, Representative Smith. I'd like Rep. Stevens to kind of wrap things up. Do we have anybody else like to make some comments? Chair Stevenson.
Well,
and then we'll go to O'Driscoll. Chair Stevenson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've carried a bill to extend reinsurance twice now, which so it may be surprising to some people in the room that I'm going to vote no today. It is absolutely clear that the individual market needs a subsidy in Minnesota to continue to operate. And before I go further, for people who want to lionize the pre-ACA system and say, boy, that much broke the individual market, for a lot of people, that market didn't work pre-ACA because they couldn't access it at all. If you had a pre-existing condition, you were not able to get in. And so I think we should be careful about pretending that everything was hunky-dory before we allowed a whole bunch of people who couldn't get health care to get health care for the first time. But in any event, the individual market does need some subsidy in order to continue to operate at a reasonable level in Minnesota. Reinsurance is one way to do that, and there are many other ways that have been discussed here. You know, we've talked about in the Senate right now, there's a proposal for direct premium subsidies. That's one way to do it. There was some conversation in the interim about doing what I think they do in Alaska, which is subsidize a specific type of condition. So they just pay for all diabetes care, essentially, in Alaska as a way to subsidize the individual market. It's an interesting idea. Another idea is a public option, which is something that my caucus advanced last session. You know, Minnesota Care, incredibly successful, incredibly popular health insurance program. The people who have Minnesota Care love it. It has worked well. It was established on a bipartisan basis 30 years ago. And I think that every Minnesotan who pays for Minnesota Care should have the option to participate in Minnesota Care if that's what they want to do. I don't think that's the way we're going to go this year, and I think that's unfortunate. But whatever we do, we have to pay for it. And we just don't have the general fund dollars to pay for reinsurance this year. And this bill right now is relying on general fund dollars, and that's why I can't vote for it. We have in the November forecast a $600 million surplus, a projected surplus in the next biennium. But I got news for you guys. The federal government's taken a big wrecking ball to that surplus. That's going to be gone. We're going to have a budget. We're going to have a budget forecast later this week, and you heard it here first. Look for less projected growth, higher projected inflation, which will decrease Minnesota's projected budget surplus and perhaps even drive us into a deficit. And that, by the way, that forecast will only be a small part of the story of what the federal government is doing to Minnesota's budget. It will get worse, not better. Starting today, when we had tariffs put on Canadian imports, which has a big impact on Minnesota's economy and will make things more expensive and make growth go less, which means that both costs for state government will go up and revenues will go down, which means that we will have less money to spend in our budget. So we cannot, absolutely cannot, afford to use general fund dollars to pay for reinsurance. And until we have a different financing mechanism in play, I will be a no.
Thank you. To wrap up, Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do appreciate the 2 days that we spent on this, on the day that we were backgrounding to bring everybody up on the committee to speed on what reinsurance is, why it's important, what the options are in today's discussion. It is clear to me that everyone around this table recognizes that we have an issue. Where the differences come is how do we solve that and how do we finance that. As I was listening to testimony today from folks, and I'm not going to be calling out individuals, I want to call out parts of what I've heard today. One of the things that we need to understand is if we don't do something with this market right now, with the waiver that we have, and that market begins to collapse on itself, what's going to happen is the folks who are sick are going to present themselves at our clinics, our urgent cares, and our emergency rooms. And if they don't have resources, that falls into uncompensated care, which means those clinics and those hospitals are going to be asked to absorb that into their overall operating budget. The challenge that we also have with our hospitals and our clinics right now is if you open up at 8 o'clock in the morning, run a day's service, and close at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, depending upon how many Medicare patients you've seen, you're literally poorer at 5 o'clock as a clinic and as an organization than you were at 8 o'clock when you opened up for the day. The reason for that, Medicare reimbursement rates are woefully underfunded to take the actual costs of what we need. And in Minnesota law, we ping a lot of our reimbursements for Medicaid and for Minnesota Care and other programs to the Medicare reimbursement rate. So if we bring another whole group of people from the private market into those programs, all we're asking those businesses to do is to get poorer faster. And in greater Minnesota, if you have hospitals that have uncompensated care, because they run on a much leaner budget, and you get folks presenting themselves, that was in the report that Representative Elkins talked about, that's how you get no, doesn't matter if you have health insurance, you don't get health care because they're closing down. And I've mentioned this before, and again, I don't say this to scare people, but last year in committee, in this Commerce Committee, we had testimony about how Fairview Hospitals in the Twin Cities area has concerns about their ability to be able to survive. That's akin to what people in greater Minnesota see with their hospital systems. This isn't a greater Minnesota. This isn't a metro problem. This is a Minnesota problem. And as I'm listening today to testimony about how this money is being pumped to the insurance companies, I have an idea that will absolutely fail, but I'm going to bring it up right now. And that is, let's not give the money to the insurance companies who can pay this, write the right coding, and get everything taken care of in the most efficient system possible because they're already paying that. Let's send a bill to the person who receives the health care and then have them apply to the state of Minnesota to get a reimbursement for paying for that care. It's absolutely ludicrous that I would even say that. I'll be the first to admit. But by putting it into a system that's already geared to being able to do this, we pick up some efficiencies. I'm not scolding anybody. I agree with Representative Ryer. This is a very uneasy feeling that each and every one of us should have around the table. We didn't go looking for this problem. It found us, and it keeps finding us. And this year, I get to be the bill author of that. And three of those four people who have been involved in this are around this table right now. I ask you for your help and support to get it out of the committee process and into Ways and Means, where Representative Torkelson and Representative Stevenson, who are going to most likely be the co-chairs of that, can work with us and work with all of us to try to figure out a solution. Again, the funding mechanism in here is something to get this bill moving. What it is at the end of the day, we will all see. But I'm asking you for your support, for your neighbors, for those who use Fairview, those who use the rural hospitals, the sickest of the sick who cannot find coverage anywhere else. Don't increase their premiums. We owe it to them as Minnesotans to try to do what we can to help manage that. And with that, Mr. Chair, I encourage a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The chairman, Chairman O'Driscoll, renews his motion that House File 837 is referred as amended to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. You're on your way, Chair O'Driscoll, and I do like the way you summed it up. Get it out of here, health, and then let Chair Stevenson and Chair Torkelson work some magic on the funding. So that's, I believe in magic. I do believe in
Mr.
magic.
Chair?
Yes.
Representative Stevens is already thanking me for that opportunity here. He just turned over here. So I'm happy to make people happy.
I'm sure he is.
Whenever possible.
Yes.
Members, thank you for the good discussion and thank you for your help. Mr. Chair, if you want to take it from here, I can take it from here. That wraps up our business. Tomorrow we have four bills that we're going to be hearing. And then later this week on Thursday, we're going to get a chance to hear from Representative Stevenson and others about social districts that were put into place here a couple years ago, getting an update. There are a number of bills that are coming before the committee on that topic. So we're going to get an idea, just like we have been educating the committee on the different topics and building on that as the week goes on. So, Mr. Chair, with that, that's all I have. If there's any other business, you can adjourn.
Anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none. good government all the time. We are adjourned.